This episode may contain explicit language. Welcome to Care and Feeding, the show where we parent together. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry who's 12, Oliver who's 9, and Teddy who's 7. We live in Tokyo, Japan.
I'm Zach Rosen. I make another podcast. It's called The Best Advice Show. And I'm dad to Noah who's 6 and Ami who's 3. We live in Detroit.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's 11, and we live in Los Angeles.
Today on the show, we'll answer a question from a listener who's dealing with that nagging feeling that she's doing something wrong. Her toddler is behind his peers in stuff like potty training and talking, and this parent can't help but feel like it's a failure on her part. We'll offer some advice and reassurance that we hope will be helpful. We'll also share a round of recommendations, and then if you're in the Slate Plus Club, I have a dilemma, and it's something that we've talked about on the show before, so I come seeking advice. Here's what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
To me, it sounds like you shouldn't do it. Just based on what you've told us, I would say don't do it.
Just like keep doing my volunteer stuff.
You can be helpful in other ways. The PTA is not the only avenue.
There's a reason other parents aren't joining.
Yes. Yes, that's not your problem.
Okay.
It's true. I totally agree with that.
If you're listening on Slate Plus, thank you so much for your support. We'll catch you later for your exclusive segment. If you're not listening on Slate Plus, we hope you'll consider it. There's no better way to support the show. And when you're a member, you also get ad-free listening on all Slate podcasts. Sounds great, right? We think so too. Go to slate.com/careplus for more info. Or you can just subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts for a little less money. The choice is yours. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll see you back here in a minute. We're back, and it's time for our listener question.
Hey, all. Not sure if I just need a pep talk or what. My son is amazing. Funny, sweet, loving, and 2.5. So, also everything else that comes with that. Tantrums, picky eater, defiant at times, etc. He also has a slight speech delay. I think I know in my heart my son isn't behind, but how do I shake the feelings of utter failure as a mom when younger kids start doing things before my son? I don't want my son to feel like I'm somehow disappointed in him, but as a first-time parent, how do you shake the feeling like you're always doing things wrong? We are trying to look at preschools for next year, and all the 3-year-old classrooms want the kids to be potty trained. My son is an August birthday, so he won't qualify to be in a 2-year-old classroom, but he just doesn't seem ready or interested in potty training yet. The Montessori that I looked at the other day wanted him independently wiping and everything, and all the other parents on the tour were so confident that their little 3-year-olds were up to the task. Sigh. The list goes on for how lousy I feel as a parent, even though the teacher in me knows he's doing just fine. Can anyone help me get out of this funk?
Independently wiping? Are you kidding me? That seems unrealistic. So first of all, I don't know who these other kids are who are just ready to independently wipe their ass at 3, but, wasn't my kid. It's not your kid and that's okay. But, back to the main point, you know, you say that your son is amazing, funny, sweet, loving. So that's true. Remember that. And this, I think this is just a matter of a pep talk that I think we can give you because, especially as a first-time parent, what you're experiencing is very normal. The compare and despair, like, dude, I've been there. I'm still there. It's a constant struggle. I think it will always be. But this is your work. And so I think, yes, you don't want your son to feel like you're disappointed in him because he's not doing anything wrong. He's a beautiful kid. And as we often talk about in this show, like therapy, this is a great thing to discuss with your therapist. And also the courage that it takes just to admit that you're feeling this, like that's really good. A lot of people will bottle the feeling that you're so eloquently articulating here. They'll bottle it up and not talk about it. So keep talking about it. But this is normal. Get off social media. I don't know if that's something that you're doing, but that's not going to help because on social media, you'll find like a 3-year-old who can like play cello and cook dinner. And so I would do that. And also just remember back to where I started with the with the potty training, we talked to a constipation coach, Dr. Christine Stevenson, on the show last year, and she was like, you can totally and should totally wait until your kid is really excited about sitting on the toilet. So like this rush to get them trained at three, I get it. There are classrooms that require it, but there are also some that don't require it. So don't think that just because the few classrooms that you visited are like, it's normal that your kid should be independently wiping. Like, it's not. There's no normal.
Yeah, the Mayo Clinic says that like 22% of children are out of diapers by 2.5 and 88% of children are out of diapers by 3.5. Mm. That still, I just want to add to this talk, Zach, that these other parents, they have a better bluff face than you. You're more in touch with, like, there's no way that everyone else on that tour has potty trained kids.
No.
They just, you are seeing them be like, oh yes, before they go home and they're like trying to potty train kids that are not ready.
Yeah.
Statistically, it has to be true.
Yes. The Mayo Clinic collects data.
It says so.
Look into school, you know, look at some more preschools. My daughter's preschool actually potty trained her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was incredible. Uh-huh. We did not have to, like, I have no memories of potty training. You know, it was just a very simple process because they were doing it at school. They were seeing other kids go to the bathroom. You know, the bathroom was right there and it was open. And seeing their peers use the potty made them want to do it too.
Also, kids change so fast. Like, the difference between now and starting school next year is long. It is long. A lot can happen in that time, potty training wise. I wonder on the potty training question if it isn't worth calling the school and finding out, like, is this a desire or is this really required, right? Because I just also think we talked with the constipation coach, like, about how schools want them to be potty trained because, of course, there's whole different regulations if you have to be changing diapers and all of that. But not every kid that goes there is fully potty trained. Like, what do we actually have to achieve? I think there's like the second, so like there's the potty training issue, but there's also this issue of like you feel that your kid is behind. And I think, Zach, you covered it well, that that's like your issue. I think too, the best thing is to one, sit with that and think like, what are they actually behind on, and does that quote unquote behind matter, right? There are things like, if you're behind on speech or some milestones, I think the important thing is to say like, okay, is this something that needs intervention? Because we know that early intervention for things like speech, motor skills is really important to lay a good foundation, but not because being behind, quote unquote behind, is somehow bad, but because kids develop at different rates and perhaps your child needs some more support in some of these areas. But I think that that is really different than feeling that they are behind and therefore going to miss out on something. So, you know, I don't want to say, like, my initial instinct is to be like, all of this is made up, like these things are made up, but there are things, speech, motor skills, consistent trends and things that your child just isn't meeting at the same time of their peers that can be indication that you need to look into it further. But none of that should make you feel that your child is not enough or you're somehow missing out on something. Kids at this age, like, it's like a growth spurt. They will go from not doing anything to doing it all overnight. And you just have to kind of support and wait for them for their body, their mind to be there.
And you can always like try to make potty training compelling, you know, like put fun stuff in the bathroom, buy one of those cutesy little kid potties, you know, that's colorful and fun looking, have activities in the bathroom for him, you know, little soft touch books that kids can, you know, look through themselves, and a favorite toy, and, you know, offer a treat as a reward for when he goes into the potty. Like, don't give up on it just because he's not showing big interest in it yet. You know, at least try. And again, like Zach said, it works best when your child is ready, when they want to do it, you know, when they're enthusiastic about doing it. But give him reasons to be enthusiastic about it.
I also think you need to find a friend you can vent this stuff to. Like, yeah, that's something that really helps me, is having the friend that I can call and be like, oh, I was just on this play date with so-and-so and their kid is doing all this, or, you know, yeah, I was texting and she's just, oh, my kid does this, my kid does that. And it's making me feel like, you know, Henry's behind or whatever. And for your friend to be able to mirror back to you like, okay, but, you know, your kid does all of these things. Your kid does all of these things. Like, you can have somebody that is going to be that mirror. I also found when I feel like this, that taking some time every night and writing down one or two things that my kid did that was awesome, or that I really appreciated, was really helpful to sort of end my day thinking about all of the things that they are doing, just to bring myself back to reminding all of these things that you said, funny, sweet, loving, and what amazing qualities those are, even if some of the other things are sort of more challenge areas. Like, we're all made up of areas that are easier for us or that are, you know, super great, and areas that are harder and not so great. And so I think it's okay to already sort of say, these are the things that we still have to work on, or the things we have a harder time with, but look at all of these amazing things, to reframe your own mind so that in the morning when you wake up and you're ready to re-engage with your kid, that you're, you know, in that mindset of like, this is a great kid, and we are like this great family. All right. Well, I do feel like this is so relatable. I don't, if you're out there and this hasn't ever happened to you, what is the secret? Because I just feel like, don't we all constantly feel like we're behind, we're not doing everything we can? But it's life. That's life. We hope some of this advice has helped you. And as always, listeners, we want to hear from you. Let us know. You can email us at KarenFeedingPod@slate.com or leave us a voicemail, 646-357-9318. We're always curious to know what you think or if you have any advice. We're going to take one more break and see you back here for recommendations. All right, let's move on to recommendations. Jamila, what are you recommending?
I am recommending, this is just for parents, meaning don't watch it with your kids, but I'm recommending Baby Reindeer on Netflix. Have either of you all seen it?
No.
Oh my goodness. It's this really fascinating limited series about this guy who starts getting stalked by this woman who comes into the pub where he works. And it is a really fascinating exploration of not just stalking, but there's also a sexual assault theme that, you know, you don't often see with male characters. Him being a victim and processing it and being vulnerable about it. And it's just really fascinating. It's really well acted. Baby Reindeer on Netflix. I think it's about 7 episodes long. But of course, I do have a parenting related recommendation as well. My recommendation is, when you travel without your kids, unless you can bring them back a really cool souvenir, don't bring them back a souvenir. Like I said on the previous episode, I just came back from Cancun. We didn't go anywhere where there was any real shopping. And so I was looking through the airport like, oh, I've got to get something for Naima. And like, her having a t-shirt that says Cancun is not going to do anything for her life. You know, like, she's too old for stuffed animals. I could have brought some candy from duty free, but we're trying to watch our sugar. So I said, you know what? I'm going to release myself from the guilt, because when she was younger, I did typically bring her things back from my travels, but I've always tried to bring her back things that she would actually like. So if you can't find something that really like does something for your kid, don't do it. A kid does not need a t-shirt or a keychain or a magnet from a place that they've never been.
And she didn't care. She was so happy that you were back, right?
Oh my gosh, she was so excited. When I picked her up at school yesterday, like, I was waiting for her in the parking lot to come from dance practice. And then I just hear, open the door, you know, and she's, get out. She's standing next to me. Yeah. Gave me the biggest hug.
Zach, what are you recommending?
I'm recommending a piece in the upcoming food issue of The New Yorker by Alexandra Schwartz. It's called When Babies Rule the Dinner Table. In the past two decades, American parents have started to ditch the purees and give babies more choice and more power at mealtime. So it's a piece about the kind of evolution of baby-led weaning. And it's got these incredibly beautiful photos of kids stuffing their face with different, like, amazing food that my kids wouldn't eat because I didn't baby-led wean, like spaghetti and sardines. And it's just, like, beautiful photography of the cutest kids. But I wanted to read one excerpt because it speaks to our show. You'll hear why. In 1894, the pediatrician Luther Emmett Holt published The Care and Feeding of Children, a catechism for the use of mothers and children's nurses, an enormously influential guide that ushered babies into an age of abstemious blandness. A child's first non-milk food should be gruel, Holt instructed in one edition. Beef juice should be offered at 5 or 6 months if the infant was sickly and anemic, at 10 or 11 months if she was hearty and robust. Next might come coddled egg whites and a few sips of orange juice. At 18 months, some prune pulp or baked apple could be allowed, along with stale bread. At 2 years, baked potato. If flavor was bad for babies, Holt believed texture to be even worse. No child can be trusted to chew meat properly, he warned. All omelets are objectionable. As for green vegetables, they must be cooked until very soft and mashed, or preferably put through a sieve. So we've come a long way, baby, babies, and it's a fun read.
And I'm just egg whites and orange juice.
Yeah, it's so disgusting.
Bottles of beef juice. No, the pictures are so cute, and I'm a big fan of baby-led weaning, so I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Great. I only read it because the link was in our, you shared the link.
Yeah. I mean, what some of these kids are eating at such a young age is incredible. Elizabeth, what are you recommending?
I have a very, like, I feel like I was inspired by Earth Day to recommend this book that we have called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. It sounds really boring, but it is a beautifully illustrated guide. There's both a kids version. The kids version, I would say, is probably for like 4 to 8 year olds. But what I really like is that the kids version actually has stuff the kids can do. Like it's about the decision making. It is not preachy. I would call it more of a beautifully illustrated reference book. We were gifted the adult copy. I bought the children's version, and it kind of lives now in our kitchen because it's a great way to sort of look at what you can recycle. It's a little less helpful here in Japan just because it's the recycling here is, it has to be done a very specific way, but it has these great tips on the decisions that you're making for single-use plastic, easy ways to not do that, and what you can actually recycle, and how to kind of pull apart packaging to be recycling the right things. It's really lovely, and I feel like if you are trying to recycle, it also explains to both adults and children like what is actually getting recycled, what's not getting recycled, what things make sense to recycle. There are some things that we were recycling that doesn't really make sense to recycle. So anyway, it's a beautiful reference book. It's called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics by Jeannie Romer.
By the way, is Japan like more evolved in their recycling practices than we are?
So yes, we're like, everything has to be separated, but the use of single, like the, everything is wrapped in plastic. So I'm very like torn on whether we're doing better here or not. Because they literally, every piece of fruit I get is wrapped in a piece of plastic, and no one carries reusable water bottles. We have everybody is buying them from vending machines, but there are no trash cans available in Japan. So you carry all your trash home and then everything gets sorted. And if you don't sort it properly, they do not pick up your garbage. So cardboard is all tied and boxed together. Every day is a different pickup. So they do, like we're sorting everything that we have special scissors to cut the stuff apart. So I'm unclear. I have not delved into what is like happening with that, but we like wash every piece of garbage. Like the only stuff going into the burnables is like actual burnable stuff and food waste. There's no like land. We don't have room for a landfill. So everything is getting, but we have huge incinerators here that's burning everything. That's also like questionable. So
yeah.
Unclear. Would need an expert to But it feels like I'm doing more because I'm sorting everything. But we have been able to, like, I think through this book too, like, really understand even things that are edible. Like, did you know kiwi skin is edible? Maybe everyone, and like, eating it is good for you.
I've heard that people do this, but that seems crazy.
So, like, there's things that we taught that I feel like I grew up tossing that actually we should be eating, which of course is in some way a way of recycling, like creating less garbage. So
cool.
Listeners, we always want to hear what you're loving. So seriously, reach out and keep the conversation going. That's it for our show. Please subscribe, leave a rating and review, and of course, tell your friends. This episode of Care and Feeding is produced by Maura Curry. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. For Jamila Lemieux and Zach Rosen, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.